no gate save their crossing and interwoven boughs. As the old ent approached, the trees lifted up their branches, and all their leaves quivered and rustled. For they were evergreen trees, and their leaves were dark and polished, and gleamed in the twilight. Beyond them was a wide level space, as though the floor of a great hall had been cut in the side of the hill. On either hand of the walls sloped upwards, until they were 50 feet high or more, and along each wall stood an aisle of trees that also increased in height as they marched inwards. At the far end the rock wall was sheer, but at the bottom it had been hollowed back into a shallow bay with an arched roof. The only roof of the hall, save the branches of the trees, which at the inner end overshadowed all the ground, leaving only a broad open path in the middle. A little stream escaped from the springs above, and leaving the main water, fell tinkling down the sheer face of the wall, pouring in silver drops, like a fine curtain in front of the arched bay. The water was gathered again into a stone basin in the floor between the trees, and thence it spilled and flowed away beside the open path, out to rejoin the Entwash in its journey through the forest.
Here we are, said Treebeard, breaking his long silence. I have brought you about 70,000 ent strides, but what that comes to in the measurement of your land I do not know. Anyway, we are near the roots of the last mountain. Part of the name of this place might be Welling Hall, if it were turned into your language. I like it. We will stay here tonight.
He set them down on the grass between the aisles of the trees, and they followed him towards the great arch. The hobbits now noticed that as he walked his knees hardly bent, but his legs opened in a great stride. He planted his big toes, and they were indeed big and very broad, on the ground first, before any other part of his feet. For a moment Treebeard stood under the rain of the falling spring and took a deep breath. Then he laughed and passed inside. A great stone table stood near, but no chairs. At the back of the bay it was already quite dark. Treebeard lifted two great vessels and stood them on the table. They seemed to be filled with water, but he held his hands over them, and immediately they began to glow, one with a golden and the other with a rich green light, and the blending of the two lights lit the bay, as if the sun of summer was shining through a roof of young leaves. Looking back, the hobbit saw that the trees in the court had also begun to glow, faintly at first, but steadily quickening, until every leaf was edged with light, some green, some gold, some red as copper, while the tree trunks looked like pillars moulded out of luminous stone.
"Well, well, now we can talk again," said Treebeard. "You are thirsty, I expect. Perhaps you are also tired. Drink this."
He went to the back of the bay, and then they saw that several tall stone jars stood there with heavy lids. He removed one of the lids and dipped in a great ladle, and with it filled three bowls, one very large and two smaller ones.
"This is an ent house," he said, "and there are no seats, I fear, but you may sit on the table."
Picking up the hobbits, he set them on the great stone slab, 6 feet above the ground, and there they sat dangling their legs and drinking in sips. The drink was like water, indeed very like the taste of the draughts they had drunk from the Entwash near the borders of the forest, and yet there was some scent or savour in it which they could not describe. It was faint, but it reminded them of the smell of a distant wood borne from afar by a cool breeze at night. The effect of the draught began at the toes, and rose steadily through every limb, bringing refreshment and vigour as it coursed upwards, right to the tips of the hair. Indeed, the hobbits felt that the hair on their heads was actually standing up, waving and curling and growing. As for Treebeard, he first laved his feet in the basin beyond the arch, and then he drained his bowl at one draught, one long, slow draught. The hobbits thought he would never stop. At last he set the bowl down again.
Ah, he sighed. Now we can talk easier. You can sit on the floor, and I will lie down. That will prevent this drink from rising to my head and sending me to sleep."
On the right side of the bay there was a great bed on low legs, not more than a couple of feet high, covered deep in dried grass and bracken. Treebeard lowered himself slowly onto this, with only the slightest sign of bending at his middle, until he lay at full length, with his arms behind his head, looking up at the ceiling, upon which lights were flickering like the play of leaves in the sunshine. Merry and Pippin sat beside him on pillows of grass.
"Now tell me your tale, and do not hurry," said Treebeard.
The hobbits began to tell him the story of their adventures ever since they left Hobbiton. They followed no very clear order, for they interrupted one another continually, and Treebeard often stopped the speaker and went back to some earlier point, or jumped forward asking questions about later events. They said nothing whatever about the ring, and did not tell him why they set out or where they were going to, and he did not ask for any reasons. He was immensely interested in everything, in the Black Riders, in Elrond and Rivendell, in the Old Forest and Tom Bombadil, in the Mines of Moria, and in Lothlorien and Galadriel. He made them describe the Shire and its country over and over again. He said an odd thing at this point.
"You never see any Ents round there, do you?" he asked. "Well, not Ents. Ent-wives, I should really say."
"Ent-wives?" said Pippin. "Are they like you at all?"
"Yes, well, no. I do not really know now," said Treebeard thoughtfully. "But they would like your country, so I just wondered."
Treebeard was, however, especially interested in everything that concerned Gandalf, and most interested of all in Saruman's doings. The hobbits regretted very much that they knew so little about them, only a rather vague report by Sam of what Gandalf had told the council. But they were clear, at any rate, that Ugluk and his troop came from Isengard and spoke of Saruman as their master.
Said
Treebeard, when at last their story had wound and wandered down to the Battle of the Orcs and the Riders of Rohan.
"Well, well, that is a bundle of news and no mistake. You have not told me all, no indeed, not by a long way. But I do not doubt that you are doing as Gandalf would wish. There is something very big going on, that I can see, and what it is maybe I shall learn in good time or in bad time. By root and twig, but it is a strange business. Up sprout a little folk that are not in the old lists, and behold, the 9 forgotten riders reappear to hunt them, and Gandalf takes them on a great journey, and Galadriel harbours them in Carras Galarthon, and orcs pursue them down all the leagues of Wilderland. Indeed, they seem to be caught up in a great storm. I hope they weather it."
"And what about yourself?" asked Merry.
"I have not troubled about the great wars," said Treebeard. "They mostly concern elves and men. That is the business of wizards. Wizards are always troubled about the future. I do not like worrying about the future. I'm not altogether on anybody's side, because nobody is altogether on my side, if you understand me. Nobody cares for the woods as I care for them, not even elves nowadays. Still, I take more kindly to elves than to others. It was the elves that cured us of dumbness long ago, and that was a great gift that cannot be forgotten, though our ways have parted since. And there are some things, of course, whose side I am altogether not on. I am against them altogether, these Burrarum,"
he again made a deep rumble of disgust,
"these orcs and their masters. I used to be anxious when the shadow lay on Mirkwood, but when it removed to Mordor, I did not trouble for a while. Mordor is a long way away. But it seems that the wind is setting east, and the withering of all woods may be drawing near. There is naught that an old Ent can do to hold back that storm. He must weather it or crack. But Saruman now, Saruman is a neighbor. I cannot overlook him. I must do something, I suppose. I have often wondered lately what I should do about Saruman.
Who is Saruman? Asked Pippin. Do you know anything about his history?
Saruman is a wizard, answered Treebeard. More than that I cannot say. I do not know the history of wizards. They appeared first after the great ships came over the sea. But if they came with the ships, I never can tell. Saruman was reckoned great among them, I believe. He gave up wandering about and minding the affairs of men and elves some time ago. You would call it a very long time ago. And he settled down at Angrenost, or Isengard, as the men of Rohan call it. He was very quiet to begin with, but his fame began to grow. He was chosen to be head of the White Council, they say, but that did not turn out too well. I wonder now if even then Saruman was not turning to evil ways. But at any rate he used to give no trouble to his neighbors. I used to talk to him. There was a time when he was always walking about my woods. He was polite in those days, always asking my leave, at least when he met me, and always eager to listen. I told him many things that he would never have found out by himself, but he never repaid me in like kind. I cannot remember that he ever told me anything, and he got more and more like that. His face, as I remember it, I've not seen it for many a day, became like windows in a stone wall, windows with shutters inside. I think that I now understand what he's up to. He is plotting to become a power. He has a mind of metal and wheels, and he does not care for growing things, except as far as they serve him for the moment. And now it is clear that he is a black traitor. He is taken up with foul folk, with the orcs. Vroom, vroom. Worse than that, he has been doing something to them, something dangerous, for these Isengarders are more like wicked men. It is a mark of evil things that came in the great darkness that they cannot abide the sun. But Saruman's orcs can endure it, even if they hate it. I wonder what he has done. Are they men he has ruined, or has he blended the races of orcs and men? That would be a black evil.
Treebeard rumbled for a moment, as if he were pronouncing some deep subterranean Entish malediction.
Some time ago I began to wonder how orcs dared to pass through my woods so freely, he went on. Only lately did I guess that Saruman was to blame, and that long ago he had been spying out all the ways and discovering my secrets. He and his foul folk are making havoc now. Down on the borders they are felling trees, good trees. Some of the trees they just cut down and leave to rot. Orc mischief, that. But most are hewn up and carried off to feed the fires of Orthonk. There is always a smoke rising from Isengard these days. Curse him, root and branch. Many of those trees were my friends, creatures I had known from nut and acorn. Many had voices of their own that are lost forever now, and there are wastes of stump and bramble where once there were singing groves. I have been idle. I have let things slip. It must stop.
Treebeard raised himself from his bed with a jerk, stood up, and thumped his hand on the table. The vessels of light trembled and sent up two jets of flame. There was a flicker like green fire in his eyes, and his beard stood out stiff as a great besom.
"I will stop it," he boomed, "and you shall come with me. You may be able to help me. You will be helping your own friends that way, too. For if Saruman is not checked, Rohan and Gondor will have an enemy behind as well as in front. Our roads go together to Isengard.
We will come with you, said Merry. We will do what we can. Yes, said Pippin. I should like to see the White Hand overthrown. I should like to be there, even if I could not be of much use. I shall never forget Ugluk and the crossing of Rohan.
Good, good, said Treebeard. But I spoke hastily. We must not be hasty. I become too hot. I must cool myself and think, for it is easier to shout stop than to do it. He strode to the archway and stood for some time under the falling rain of the spring. Then he laughed and shook himself, and wherever the drops of water fell glittering from him to the ground, they glinted like red and green sparks. He came back and laid himself on the bed again and was silent. After some time the hobbits heard him murmuring again. He seemed to be counting on his fingers.
Fangorn, Finglas, Fladriff, I,
he sighed. The trouble is that there are so few of us left, he said, turning towards the hobbits. Only three remain of the first Ents that walked in the woods before the darkness. Only myself, Fangorn, and Finglas, and Fladriff, to give them their elvish names. You may call them Leaflock and Skinbark, if you like that better. And of us three, Leaflock and Skinbark are not much use for this business. Leaflock has grown sleepy, almost tree-ish, you might say. He has taken to standing by himself half asleep all through the summer, with the deep grass of the meadows round his knees. Covered with leafy hair he is. He used to rouse up in winter, but of late he's been too drowsy to walk far even then. Skinbark lived on the mountain slopes west of Isengard. That is where the worst trouble has been. He was wounded by the orcs, and many of his folk and his tree herds have been murdered and destroyed. He's gone up into the high places, among the birches that he loves best, and he will not come down. Still, I dare say, I could get together a fair company of our younger folk, if I can make them understand the need, if I could rouse them. We are not a hasty folk. What a pity there are so few of us.
Why are there so few when you've lived in this country so long? Asked Pippin. Have a great many died?
Oh, no, said Treebeard. None have died from inside, as you might say. Some have fallen in the evil chances of the long years, of course, and more have grown tree-ish. But there were never many of us, and we have not increased. There have been no entings, no children, you would say, not for a terrible long count of years. You see, we lost the Entwives.
How very sad, said Pippin. How was it that they all died?
They did not die, said Treebeard. I never said died. We lost them, I said. We lost them and we cannot find them, he sighed. I thought most folk knew that. There were songs about the hunt of the Ents for the Entwives, sung among elves and men from Mirkwood to Gondor. They cannot be quite forgotten.
Well, I'm afraid the songs have not come west over the mountains to the Shire, said Merry. Won't you tell us some more? Or sing us one of your songs?
Yes, I will indeed, said Treebeard, seeming pleased with the request. But I cannot tell it properly, only in short, and then we must end our talk. Tomorrow we have councils to call, and work to do, and maybe a journey to begin. It is rather a strange and sad story, he went on after a pause. When the world was young, and the woods were wide and wild, the Ents and the Entwives, and there were Ent maidens then, ah, the loveliness of Fimbrethil, of Wandlim the light-footed in the days of our youth. They walked together and they housed together, but our hearts did not go on growing in the same way. The Ents gave their love to things that they met in the world, and the Entwives gave their thought to other things, for the Ents loved the great trees and the wild woods and the slopes of the high hills, and they drank of the mountain streams and ate only such fruit as the trees let fall in their path, and they learned of the elves and spoke with the trees. But the Entwives gave their minds to the lesser trees and to the meads in the sunshine beyond the feet of the forests, and they saw the sloe in the thicket, and the wild apple and the cherry blossoming in spring, and the green herbs in the waterlands in summer, and the seeding grasses in the autumn fields. They did not desire to speak with these things, but they wished them to hear and obey.